Welcome to Tracing the Roundup,
a podcast where we will be uncovering, learning, and discussing the Chandler Roundup that took place in 1997.
Throughout this podcast, we'll look at the Chandler Roundup through the lens of history and context surrounding it.
Yay, I can't wait. For those who may not know, this was an event that had...
And still do, may I add.
Yeah, exactly. It continues to have a serious impact on immigrant communities in and outside of Chandler.
Anyways, we're your hosts, Bree and Evan, and we're excited for you to come on this journey with us to discuss this important piece of immigration history.
Alrighty, I say we kick this series off by contextualizing what all of this is and even about.
There are so many legal documents, interviews, case briefs, and articles to introduce you to throughout this podcast. I'm excited that we're able to share this with you all.
I agree. This is going to be able to give our readers the ability to increase their knowledge and critical thinking skills through just one historical event that impacted the local and larger immigrant communities living across the U.S. So this episode is titled Historical Legacy of the 1997 Chandler Roundup.
So, Bree, why are we talking about this? Are people even going to care when they listen?
Well, in my opinion, they should. The Chandler Roundup is more than just a piece of history. It reflects issues of immigration, identity, law enforcement, and civil rights in our society that have continued to the present.
So, understanding this event is crucial for understanding our current system and how we can improve it.
Yeah, exactly. But for us to improve our system, we have to be educated on our justice system.
I see. Well, let's not waste any time. Let's educate and get into all of this.
Yeah, so let us start with who was affected by the roundup.
I thought residents who lived in Chandler, AZ, were the ones who were affected.
Yeah, that's true, but several other residents who lived in Chandler were impacted, but not every resident was impacted in the same way.
What do you mean?
The main residents that were affected were the ones that police officers perceived as immigrants regardless if they had documentation.
I'm sorry, how does someone even identify as being an immigrant by simply looking at them? That's terrible.
Right, I know. When I read about this, I was baffled, but it's okay, we'll get more into that topic later.
Okay, good, because I'm still trying to figure out where that makes sense for them to do.
I know. Okay, anyways, moving on. I know you're not from Arizona, but have you ever been to Chandler?
Duh, isn't that close to here?
Yes, but I was wondering, because this picture we're going to look at happened in Chandler, and that's only 15 minutes away from the ASU campus. So this picture that we're going to look at is from AZ Central, and it was taken during the roundup. Do you want to tell the listeners what you see in the picture?
Yeah, of course. It looks like there's a Hispanic man who's scared with his arms up getting searched by local law enforcement.
Yeah, exactly. In a review done by the Office of the Attorney General, like they're showing in this picture, police were racially profiling those who looked Mexican by questioning them and asking for their identification.
So if an officer saw someone walking down the street and thought that they looked Mexican, they would pull them over?
No, yeah. In one article I read, they wouldn't harass wealthy-looking Hispanic people, but they would harass any person that looked like they were not wealthy, or depending on what car they would drive or the neighborhood they lived in. They had nasty phrases for people that looked like they slept in the clothes the night before, or if they had unshaved faces.
Well, this doesn't sound very fair. What gave local law enforcement the authority to just start questioning and searching people based on their race?
Okay, so let me explain more in detail how this started. The event involved a series of local police and Department of Homeland Security raids in the Chandler area, which aimed at undocumented immigrants, which were conducted under the justification of maintaining public safety.
Well, what I'm hearing, it sounds like instead of fostering safety, the operation installed fear within the community.
No, definitely. It contributed to fear and distrust of the police within the immigrant community, which continues to this day. May I add, the treatment the immigrants received from the officers was fueled by racism, and it was incredibly dehumanizing. And if you need proof or want me to check my facts, I'll read you these former Border Patrol interviews from years later. With the processing and paperwork of this process of unhuming people's lives were referred to as just part of the job, as best, and referring to detaining immigrants as transporting prisoners in other instances.
I would hate to be seen like that. Nobody deserves to go through that. Wait, I have a question. How were these raids conducted?
Terribly. The police and federal agents approached people just walking down the street, and they suspected, if they suspected they were in the U.S. illegally, They demanded to see documentation. As we saw in the photo earlier, they were detaining anybody unable to prove they were legal residents of the U.S.
That is awful. I can only imagine how this affected these families.
I know, me too. But it was bad for a couple of weeks. There was no warrants, no warning. People were just being interrogated because of what they were wearing. If someone spoke Spanish or just simply looked like an immigrant, according to the officers, then they were arrested. Get this. Immigrants were deported and legal residents were detained. So that means they were literally all arrested just based on whether the officer felt they made the cut or not.
So why were these raids initiated? Did the city of Chandler want these to happen? Or whose ideas were these?
So kind of, yeah. The raids were initiated by the city of Chandler, according to them, as an effort to promote public safety. This justification comes from a sentiment in Chandler at the time that the city was dangerous, and as it's so often the case, the easiest political target to blame problems on is immigrants.
That makes sense, especially if they are undocumented because they can't vote or publicly respond without fear of deportation.
Yeah, exactly. This is why we see this pattern of portraying immigrants as criminals often in the media.
I feel like for us to fully understand what led to this sentiment in the first place, we have to look at the history of Chandler. Are you going to talk about that?
Boy, yes, I'm getting there. I'm going to give you the full rundown right now. Chandler, founded in 1912, started as an agriculture hub. Using irrigation methods to support farming, the town's growth was influenced by migration, especially after the 1910 Mexican Revolution. In 1941, the establishment of an Air Force base changed the local economy, but Chandler kept its farming roots.
What happened after this?
It drove many Mexicans to immigrate to the U.S., and many of those seeking work close to the border chose to come to Arizona, including Chandler. This matters because agriculture not only provided jobs, but also shaped the community's identity. However, during the Great Depression, Mexican workers who earned about half the wages of white workers were unfairly blamed for the region's economic troubles.
Why were the immigrants blamed for the economic troubles of Chandler?
So this was a common right-wing tactic to shift blame during economic hardships, leading to the deportation of many immigrants during the Great Depression. By 1950, Chandler's population had doubled to 3,800, and it became an official city.
So basically, migrants were welcome to boost the economy, but when things went wrong, they were unfairly blamed for their struggles.
Yeah, exactly. In the later half of the century, Chandler's economy shifted. The post-war boom led to housing developments, and the growing electronics and manufacturing sectors became the city's main industries as it grew wealthier.
I feel like this would drastically change the perception of Chandler initially and externally.
Yeah, not to mention the immigrant encouraging agriculture origins of the city were not as visible as its modern urban revolution, which caused harm to the perceptions of migrants, and it was not unique to Chandler. In the 1990s, stricter immigration laws closed crossings in Texas and California, forcing many migrants to Arizona. This heightened negative attention and political pressure, resulting in the 1996 Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, which allowed deportation for misdemeanors and facilitated racial targeting of immigrants by police.
So, Brie, whether immigrants were seen as stealing jobs or being dangerous, depending on whether the rhetoric was aimed at poorer, rich races, created pressure on Arizona police to act. With shifting demographics, political incentives, and new legal powers, the stage was set for the Chandler Roundup to happen.
Interestingly, anti-immigration laws allow deportation for nearly any reason under the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act. By breaking deportation into multiple sections, the law downplays its systematic issues and impacts.
Wait, I'm remembering something.
What?
I remember the Bracero program, which brought millions of Mexican workers to the U.S. for short-term agriculture jobs from 1942 to 1964. What stands out to me is the pattern. The U.S. brings in migrant workers to boost the economy with low wages, then turns around and deports them. Did they think their families wouldn't follow?
It feels like the U.S. wants the labor, but not the people behind it.
And that wraps up our history education session.
Wait, so speaking of activism, have you registered to vote yet, or what?
As we transition to how all of this impacts us present day, let's take a break to promote voter registration and discuss Proposition 314.
Yeah, that is so good. This proposition has the potential to significantly impact immigrant communities by making immigrants at any point other than the official port of the entry of state crime.
This allows Arizona police to arrest people for immigrating undocumented and allows state judges to order deportations.
They're blurring the lines between state law enforcement and federal immigration officials, similar to the Legal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act and SB 1070, which we will be talking about later in the next session. Alrighty, now that we're back from that short break, we learned about what happened and what led to the Chandler Roundup. Let's talk about its enduring impacts.
I bet there are several impacts that the Chandler Roundup left, but I bet not all of them were positive.
Yeah, you're right. Its repercussions go beyond the event itself, shaping how communities view law enforcement and their relationships with authority.
Exactly. The Chandler Roundup made it clear that even just being noticed by local police could be risky for immigrant communities, especially if someone in your family was undocumented.
However, the police did receive a small amount of legal pushback from their detaining of U.S. citizens, which resulted in a 29-plaintiff lawsuit being settled for $400,000, but no legal course was available for those who were deported during the raids.
So basically, the relationship between the immigrant communities in Chandler and elsewhere in Arizona was made worse than it had ever been. And then the recession of the late 2000s hit, and history repeated itself, with immigrants being blamed for economic issues created by the wealthy.
Exactly. This anti-immigrant sentiment allowed for the 2010 passing of the Show Me Your Papers Law, or SB 1070, which at the time was the most extreme anti-immigration law in the country.
What did the law do?
This law empowered police to target suspected immigrants, which allowed deportations for those without paperwork. It mandated documentation checks during routine traffic stops, required immigrants to carry their documentation at all time, and permitted warrantless arrests for suspected immigration-related crimes, further entrenching racial profiling.
Wait, state immigration laws, warrantless arrests, did Arizona lawmakers not read the Constitution or something?
Well, those sections actually would be deemed unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 2012, as well as striking down the requirements to always have your documents with you, but they upheld the section that required police to demand documentation during any traffic stops or detaining of someone they believed may be undocumented.
And this remains the law in Arizona to this day?
Yep.
Well, I'm guessing that didn't help much with the fear of immigrants in the state already had for interacting with police.
No, definitely not. And the worsening of those fears has been justified as deportation across the country rose to record levels in the decade following the law, and anti-immigration rhetoric has become even more of a dominant talking point in state and national politics, both issues that continue to this day.
It's important to note that after SB 170, immigrant communities didn't remain passive in the face of hostility. Organizations like Aliento, founded in 2016, emerged to tackle the fear of and trauma among mixed-status families, boosting activism. One significant achievement was their advocacy for a law passed in 2022 that allowed undocumented students in Arizona to pay in-state university tuition. So, Bree, what does all of this mean for the U.S. citizens and mixed-status families?
Well, it means the aftermath of the roundup still lingers, fostering an atmosphere of fear. These families are left to navigate the complexities of legal status and social perceptions, which led to anxiety and a sense of vulnerability.
Since we're coming to the end, here are a few key points that we'd like you, our listeners, to remember from this episode.
These are some hard topics we're talking about today.
For sure, but they're really important.
I agree. What do we hope listeners take away from today?
First, it's essential to understand that the Chandler Roundup didn't occur in a vacuum. Existing policies and regulations allowed local law enforcement and Border Patrol to take actions knowingly or unknowingly that harmed parents, children, and families.
We recognize that it wasn't one person's fault per se, but as we see from a historical context, there were and are efforts to dehumanize immigrants.
It's easy to overlook, but despite efforts to to marginalize these communities, events like the Chandler Roundup sparked significant activism, strength, and advocacy among them. This resilience has been crucial in challenging harmful policies and practices. As we look into the future, what steps can we take?
There are several: increasing awareness, advocating for fair treatment, fostering community engagement, voting, especially at the state level. Those are essential. By educating ourselves about the past, we can help build a more inclusive and equitable future.
Thank you for tuning in to our first episode of Tracing the Roundup, a podcast where you'll get insight on motivations behind this operation.
Understand the different roles involved in the case, and begin to connect the long-lasting outcomes of the Chandler Roundup on the immigrant communities in Chandler and elsewhere.
Together, we can raise awareness, build solidarity, and advocate for the humanization of immigrant communities in the U.S.
Thank you for tuning in to Tracing the Roundup. We're your hosts, Brian Evan, and it's been a pleasure bringing you on this historical occasion in future episodes.